This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Is the spirit starting to move you, Catch?
I'm moving. I got arms and shoulders and hips and one thigh moving right now.
Isn't it almost amazing that we was able to get this song and not pay for it?
Ass shaking too. I'm rump shaking. I'm backing that ass up like Juvenile was doing over the weekend with Tom Steyer, like not backing that ass up. Did you see that video?
It's just like such appropriate, especially on Super Tuesday.
The line at the voting place that I went to in Travis County was not very long today, thank God.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. All right, this is my favorite part, Catch.
Like CeeLo.
I want to meet Jonelle Monáe, and then I want to dance with her to this song.
This is... I mean, it's almost impossible not to have a smile on your face after that song, right?
It's true.
I mean, it's impossible. Like, no matter what mood I am when I start these podcasts and when you have kids, you know, those moods can vary from time to time. But when I hear Crown and MOB, I feel so much better. But welcome back to the Drunk Uncles Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Andre Richardson, and clearly... spoiler alert that you already know. My main man, my ride or die, Suge Knight Tupac, my dude, Jeff Ketchum, is in the house as a special guest today. Welcome, Ketch.
Thank you for having me in the Drunk Uncle. What are we? Is this the cabin, the den?
The office. The office, you know, the den, and then, you know, when we pass out, it just is probably wherever we are at that moment. So,
because I'll be on the couch in a little while, and, you know, I might need some therapy.
No, you definitely will. So we're definitely going to do the damn thing. You know, it's funny, Catch. I'm going to ask you two things. So, like, you and I are joined. All right. So I tweeted out something. Sometimes you go down a rabbit hole and you ask yourself, why did you do this? So I tweeted out something the other week.
I call that Monday through Sunday.
Okay. So you appreciate this. So I tweeted out something. What was Tom Herbert going to meet with Brian Kelly, right? And that, you know, to kind of learn a little bit about, you know, making that transition. And I started getting hit on Twitter from, you know, a lot of like OU fans, and they're just, you know, trashing this and that, to be expected, right? So I got curious, right? And I thought, okay, well, I'll just go over to the Oklahoma Rivals page, because clearly they must have some stuff on there. And I started going down this rabbit hole, Catch. I did not realize how hated you and I are amongst Sooner fans. I'll be honest, I was very oblivious that there's people out there, Catch, who root for the other team that hate us. I mean, hate. I didn't know this. I didn't realize. You know, it's interesting. They tag us on their website, but I guess we don't get notifications because we're on OB. But it's very, I was a little bit shocked.
Welcome to the party. I feel like you're like Keanu Reeves in The Matrix. And what is it? You took the red pill? I think.
Yeah, whichever one it was.
That awakens you. Yes.
And I mean, look, I always knew you were hated. I just didn't know I was hated.
Because you know what you did? You made the mistake of thinking, I haven't done anything to these people.
Correct.
As if that matters.
Correct. And I thought to myself, how many times have I pumped up Lincoln Riley, and God knows how many times I've pumped up Mike Gundy. I mean, that's a countless number of times.
I feel like we're very, not supportive, that's the wrong word, but like we eagerly praise those people.
We do. We do. And like, it was like, oh, these fan guys catching on or this and that. And I was like, wow. And it was like, we were linked together. Like we were by proxy
it was like I got your hate, but I also got my own hate, and I also had my own, like, fan war was one a nickname I saw. You know, they put an F in front of Anwar and called me fan war. Yeah, like, you know, like, oh, because he's a fan of the team and this and that. And I found it fascinating. Okay, but that was just rabbit hole one.
Oh, dude, I typically stay away from those rabbit holes because I know, like, it's irrational. It doesn't always make sense. You know, like, I'm pretty sure I picked Oklahoma to beat Texas in the Cotton Bowl this past year. And, you know, like, rationality amongst college sports fans went out the window long time ago. With the advent of the internet, there's nothing sacred.
It's fat. And again, never had that in the NFL. When I was I covered the NFL. I didn't have beef with the Bears writers, right? There was still like Brad Biggs is tweeting me like, oh, there's Anwar thinking he's not. And I like we didn't have beefs with like the Free Press or Detroit News. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't, like, no one went at each other. I didn't have fan bases, like the Green Bay fan base talking crap to me, the Atlanta fan base saying, like, you know, just trolling me the entire time. And so it's just, I'm used to it. Clearly, I'm getting used to it. But it's still sometimes I look up and I'm like, is this really happening? It's like, yeah. Like, I was down, I'm going to tell you this. I was last year. You know a little bit of the story, and I was like, I was out and I was in downtown and a guy taps me on the shoulder. I won't name the crew that he was with. But I can say it. So it's Baker Mayfield's crew, right? And they happen to be to the same bar, and the dude taps me on my shoulder and throws horns down. As I'm sitting at the bar, just minding my own business. I'm like, really, dude? Like, seriously? And that's just where it's at. Like, you just are just chilling, minding your own business. Some dude's crew rolls by, and the dude's like, ha-ha, I know who you are. Screw you, man.
You know, in another day and age, a younger Anwar, just out. I mean, you know, because when you're younger, slight insults like that are about principles at that point. Like, rolling up to me and like dissing me and like, I have nothing to do with you, but you've now crossed into my territory. And now if something like that were to happen to me, I think I would look at my watch and be like, oh, I should be home now. It's clearly past my bedtime. If Baker Mayfield's crew is rolling into the same place that I'm at.
Yes. Well, first and foremost, okay. So I left a couple of things out, but there were some words exchanged eventually because I thought they kind of crossed the line. All right, damn it, catch. There were some words exchanged between me and the crew and Baker. We kind of went back and forth, and then the night ended. So, but it was, you know, it's just college football. All right. So, Super Tuesday, last thing, Super Tuesday. You got out and voted, catch?
I did. I'm done. No early voting. I actually voted. Today, there were like six people in line in front of me. It was nothing like a presidential general election. This was tame. Only one dude in front of me coughed the entire time.
Ooh, made you feel better.
I washed my hands twice.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have towels, so I had to improvise. We're just going to be out of paper towels. I don't know what that school's going to do. The school's towel dispenser. I've also instructed my kids that they have to wash their hands at least three times today while they're at school.
Smart. Now, they say this whole virus thing isn't necessarily hitting the kids, but that being said, I still think that's a really smart idea. Clearly, right? Because we're just coming to a standstill with this. But you know what? When it comes to election, you know what today always shows me, catch? It shows me when I go to the voting booth, that as much as informed as I think I am, there's just a lot of stuff that I don't know. Because I'll be honest with you, Catch, one day I'm going to find out what the railroad commissioner does. Like, I've got to know, like, who is this guy or women? Like, who's running for this? Like, what is this railroad commission people doing? Because I just see them all the time and I'm just clueless. And like, that might be, honestly, Catch, might be like the smartest thing to run for
because all you really need is to get like a group of friends to support you. Because I'm going to check and see how many people voted for this railroad commission person, because I don't even know. And like you go down the list of certain things and you're looking at certain judges and you're like, I don't really know who this judge is. And you know, and then they had all these propositions on the ballot. And it was all just like simple stuff where it's just, you know, do you think someone should have healthcare? You think like you should have good education?
You're really kind of an asshole if on any of those questions they asked, you responded no.
Oh, right? Right. The one of them was, do you think right of, I have it in front of me, right of dignity and respect? Like who's like, nah, I don't think so. I don't think so. Fair criminal justice system. Like some of them just fascinating.
I was gonna tweet this, and then I realized, oh my god, it'll make it back to Orange Bloods, and people will freak out, and like I'll cause a storm today if I. But I'll say it on the podcast.
Okay.
I didn't vote for a single man. I voted for all women. All women.
Really?
In the instance where only a man was listed as an option, he didn't get my vote.
Wow.
Only women.
Wow, that's fascinating. I think. In mine, I didn't. Yours is very conscious. Mine was not a conscious decision, by the way.
No,
mine was not conscious. It just so ended up being like I scribbled down the people, the paper that I wanted to vote for. But it ended up being only one guy. In hindsight, it ended up being one guy, and the rest were women. But it was not a conscious decision.
I'm all for giving women a chance. Let them have a chance. We've had lots of chances.
Yes. Okay. And listen, it's your vote. And yeah. That's the thing. Like, you know, it's your vote is what you get to do. We're not talking politics. We're not getting into specifics. Clearly, everyone can figure out we are Democrats, right? Because I think the Democrats had the propositions, and I don't think the Republicans had theirs. Yeah,
the Republicans were not asking yes or no. You think people should be dignified and treated? Correct. There was some weird stuff on the ballot. I was like, I don't even know what this is for, but. Yes, I think everybody should have dignity. Yes,
yes, everyone should have, you know, health care, and everyone should be treated with respect. You know, it's just like it was fascinating. But all right, well, we'll move on from Super Tuesday. By the way, last thing on Super Tuesday, did you see the story? I think it was it Reuters that tweeted out a picture with a caption with Joe Biden, and it said that, you know, he was Joe Biden. Was eating at a Whataburger chicken joint with
Buttigieg,
and it was not clearly Whataburger's not a chicken joint, and clearly he was with Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, look, Buttigieg and O'Rourke like on the same. So one guy like canceled, like dropped out, and then the other guy at the same time was being pictured, and I just think. That everybody looked at those two white guys and were like, they're the same.
Well, clearly.
Clearly. Reuters did.
Clearly.
Reuters did that thing where like, God, see, you're used to this on your side as a black male because it happens all the time.
Oh, yeah. I've been called Cedric Golden at games. And I'm like, you're not even trying. Like, you're not even trying if you call me Cedric Golden. Like, you're not even trying. Like, I've been called that. There's a guy I haven't even corrected him. There's one of these super fans, and he'll see me like you know, walking down. I'm like, hey, good article, said. I'm like, thanks. And then sometimes I'm like, I should just like go screw yourself, man. Like Statesman is the shit. You should know that. Like, just something that makes Fed look bad. You know?
Nobody's ever come up to me and been like, yo, Brian Davis, you're doing great work with the Statesman. I don't ever get that. I get the guy from The Shield, and it's been a while. But when that show was on, once a month, somebody would come up to me and be like, I love the fucking Shield, man.
Oh, wow.
It happened to me at a Baltimore Orioles game.
Uh-huh.
I went to the concession stand, and the girl totally freaked out and asked for my autograph.
No, what did you do? You had to sign it.
I didn't know who she thought I was.
Oh, but if you had to scribble something, you should have just scribbled something.
Blake Brockermeyer. I did that 25 years ago for a kid who mistakenly thought that me being like 9 inches shorter than Blake Brockermeyer, the kid had his dad too. Like, I really looked at him. Wow. Like, can't you explain this to him that there's a good chance that I'm not Blake Brockermeyer? But anyway, I digress.
Good. No, that's
it's Super
good.
Tuesday,
yes.
And we're talking about Super Sam. Is that the?
Yeah. Well, you know, so I wanted you on the podcast because I think you and I both have touched on the Sam Ehlinger thing. And I think it's, look, I think when we go into the season, it is super fair to say that one of the biggest storylines is going to be Sam Ehlinger. And, you know, maybe the word legacy, but essentially we're talking about a guy who's a four-year starter, who will be a four-year starter at the University of Texas. It's only been done two other times, I believe.
Just a handful.
Yeah, it's a thing, but two other times. So it's rare air. And I think you and I, of course, it's offseason, but I think you and I have really started trying to zero in. And I think this will be a lot of times the storylines that you and I, and you know, I'm not trying to be egotistical, but a lot of times the things that you and I start talking about early in the year gets picked up a little bit later on. And then that ends up being like the huge talking points and so on and so forth. So, and I really find our conversation about Sam, what he's accomplished, and essentially what he needs to accomplish, right? Because you put a great poll out on Twitter wanting to know essentially, and you put this in your column, essentially when we talk about Sam and what he needs to do, essentially needs to win a Big 12 championship. So I want to start first. Before we go to what we feel he needs to do, let's have a conversation about what we feel like he has done. And I think you and I have a little disagreement as far as like, you know, how transcendent he has been. But from your point of view, you know, over the 3-year time span it's been, what do you think Sam Ehlinger has been able to accomplish?
You know, I will answer that question in a bit of a roundabout way, because as you were talking, I was like compiling thoughts. And I just wanted to say, it's fascinating how different this discussion feels a year later, removed from the bowl game against Georgia, because after his sophomore season, they build, you know, they beat Georgia, they win a major bowl game, and there's this feeling like, God, he just finished his second year, and look what they just did. And so I think the thought process was, the sky's the limit. He hasn't even played in his upperclassmen years yet. And so, like, who knows what he can accomplish? And then a year later, last year was such a dud. And half of his upperclassmen years have been used. And now there's almost this weird, I won't say panic, but there's an urgency that, God, now we're at this moment where, you know, I'm doing things like writing polls. If Sam doesn't win a Big 12 championship in the next 9 months, you know, what does it mean for his overall legacy? And I'm a bit bemused, I suppose, by like just how quickly the talking points of, you know, because there was a part of me that thought about, it's in almost every great Texas quarterback, the big jump has occurred from sophomore season to junior season. And I thought that would occur a season ago, because Sam as a sophomore was a bit up and down. The fascinating thing about Sam as a sophomore is that he played his best games against the best teams with the best quarterbacks. So when he went up against Kyler Murray or Will Greer or Fromm from Georgia, like, you know, that was when we saw the best of Sam. And so it was like, well, Sam's proven that in the big moments he can play big. Now it's about cleaning up sometimes some of these less than big moments. And his junior season didn't really play out like that. Like, it wasn't – it didn't follow trend lines coming out of that sophomore season. I think that enough – I don't think enough has been talked about with regards to the rib injury from last season.
Correct. And to be fair, let's have a full disclosure on this one. We've learned about the rib injury – but, you know, what's the best way to say it? I would say we were asked, but, you know, there were certain things where the severity was, and what was told to us is, hey, if you make this into a huge situation, you're putting a target on this guy's back.
okay? And because now everyone knows where to go. So
very taboo for us to even, when we tried, like, it was our job to, like, ask about it.
Yes.
And every time you were at a press conference or a press gathering and did, like, a baby inquisition, like, hey, anything about that that's, like, should be, like, it was completely dismissed.
Correct. And I think within the building, it was dismissed a little bit to us in our reporting, because I think there was people trying to protect Sam, right?
Yes.
So I think because of that, I think you and I always believed that there was probably a lot more to that that was being led on. But at the end of the day, if our sources we're going down that road and our sources are closing that door, well, we know they're closing it for a reason, but at that point, we have to just report what we have and let it go.
Yeah, and what's interesting is I got into it with a source of mine, a source that tipped me off on the injury in the first place. I still remember you and I having the conversations about the background to that injury, and there's no reason for us to do a podcast on the injury itself, but it is an important note to make about his season from a year ago, because Sam was lights out in September. You go back, you look at the LSU game, phenomenal. Easily played the best game that any quarterback had played all season against that defense. Like, that defense eventually got to be very good. It's full of future NFL players, especially in the secondary. Sam was sensational. You know, if Joe Burrow is just a little bit off his game, very good chance Texas wins that game because Sam played so well. It's almost as if the season was two different seasons. There was September. There's three seasons. There's September. There's like the six games in between. And then there's the final two games of the year where the Sam from September showed up in the final regular season game and then in the bowl game and reminded you, like, oh, my God, when this guy's at his best, Sam Ehlinger is a difference maker at a very high level. He wasn't always that guy throughout the season, and it's hard to pin down how much was coaching, scheme, decision-making from those in charge of making decisions, how much of it was injury, and how much of it was Sam wasn't quite on it either, with those things also compiling to it and just making it a bit more troublesome for him to be the best player he could be. So, to your original question, what do I think Sam has accomplished, right? I think Sam has accomplished the minimum level. Like, he's gotten to the point where he's at the last step. And a lot of guys never get there. He's gone from young player to pretty good player to good. And this is all blurred. This isn't like, I don't know that there's definitive steps that have been taken, but he's very good. And I think when you're very good at quarterback, typically you end up having very good teams, not average, a little bit better than good. You know, Texas against Georgia and Utah in the bowl games, I think we could safely say they were very good. Now, and maybe even great in those games, but now the last step that I thought Sam would take a year ago and it didn't quite happen is that step from very good college quarterback and all of that that goes with it to being a great quarterback consistently. And it's the thing that now Sam has to do. And it's probably the toughest step to take because the demands are that he's consistently playing at a level that few other quarterbacks in the country are performing at. Had he been that a year ago, Texas almost certainly is playing in the Big 12 championship game and beating some of the teams that it didn't beat. And I think that, you know, I think he's at the point of potentially achieving greatness, but he hasn't yet done that.
Okay, interesting. Check your Slack message too, by the way, Catch. Okay. I hear what you're saying, and I think for me, and I think being a person who's covered this team and not a person who's done it for years and years, and so I don't have the heyday years of my memory. I don't have the 10-win Mac Brown seasons, and that was a disappointment, right? So you have that working knowledge, and I think other Texas fans have that working knowledge, and that's what they look at, and that's how they judge the program. And I come from a different space where I look at my first year, I look at it was Charlie Strong's first year. So I look at this was crap, right? And then I looked at two more years after that, and I'm like, well, this is crap. So, you know, so there's no like, oh my gosh, like this is this Texas, it was this, Texas was that. The Texas that I know, I have head knowledge, clearly I follow sports, clearly I know how good the team and the program used to be, but I still have to operate out of today. So all I've seen is bad quarterback play, right? I've seen Tyrone. It was when I got here, it was David Ash versus Swoops. And then, of course, you know, when I got here, Ketch, and this is, you know, I got here in June of 14, I was kind of perplexed because I was like, wait a second. So this guy's had these concussions / brain injuries, but they still think he might play. That doesn't seem right. And then, of course, he gets knocked out in the first game. I say he finishes the game, but then he just never plays for UT again. Then it's Swoops, right? Then it's Swoops versus Hurd. And, you know, again, you have like one shining moment with Gerard Hurd versus Cal, a game that they lost, and then that's it. And then we, you know, so Gerard goes over to quarterback the next time, and Shane Buechele's going to come in, and it's the whole Swoops versus Buechele type of thing. And that my report, of course, that lit the, you know, everything on fire that year. And then at the end of the day, Ketch, for all of the uprising about that quarterback competition, the winner delivered five wins. That's all it was. Like, when it was all said and done, all of that, like, going back and forth, and you're crazy, and this is crazy, and blah, 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 and Charlie. Of course, we know it was Charlie that wanted him to start and all that. At the end of the day, it was 5 wins. That's it. And 3 interceptions versus Kansas in a game that I will never forget. So then when I look at Sam, I think I come from a different lens because I look at a program that I saw bad quarterback play for years. And then he gets in as a freshman and he wasn't really good. He was learning his way through it, but those critical interceptions, the Oklahoma interception, and of course the Texas Tech interception, like there were some bad moments. And then he didn't really play particularly well in that bowl game. But regardless, you felt it like, okay, maybe. And then, of course, we talk about the sophomore year, and that's just a fantastic year, one he'll be remembered for. And then last year, statistically, he did better in just about every single category. So my view of Sam is different, I'd say, than your view and probably the average Longhorn fan view, because I look at it strictly from – from when I got here in 14 to where it is now, it's like night and day.
Well, and look, I will concede that he's way better than shit, right? Like, I don't know, in fairness to the conversation that we're having, when we talk about Sam, not enough is made of the fact that he has single-handedly saved the position for Texas at a time when every year for most of a decade, the question was who's going to be the quarterback and can they be better than shit? He's better than that. We haven't had to have this talk for a couple of years now about who's going to be the guy and can he even be competent? Because like you said, we've gone through, when you arrived, competent would have actually been nice.
Yes.
I think about a point that you made maybe in my thread from 10 Thoughts from the Weekend, maybe from the Sunday Pulpit. I can't remember when it was made. But one of the points that was made from you was that one of the things that Sam gives you is that you've got confidence that Texas can beat anybody that's listed on the schedule on any given day because they've got Sam at quarterback. And I don't disagree with that. Like, I think that that's absolutely right. Like, I referenced the LSU game in the podcast 10 minutes ago. But what I don't know is what that ultimately is worth. So, and there are like, different levels to this conversation that we're having, right? Because being able to say that is infinitely better than where Texas was when you showed up to cover Texas on the football beat in year one, and better than it was in year two, and kind of so on and so on and so on. But like when Sam's career is over, he's going to have something besides that to hang his hat on. That's I think much more tangible than the upside. And it's that Sam's going into his it's a weird thing when a guy is a quarterback for 4 years, because for the first few years, I think we somewhat treat a guy with kid gloves because he's young, and because we know that in theory he should improve step by step, and that, you know, you're hopeful that at the end of the year you've got a really, really good player on your hands. I think he is a really, really good player. And again, last year is I give him a smidge of a mulligan. Injuries, poor coaching, those two things alone. Look, you know, he didn't exactly have, other than Devin Duvernay, nobody was tearing it up for him to help him. It wasn't like he had the receivers that Joe Burrow had a year ago. Think about the performance. Yeah, you think about the performance that he had against LSU. He did that with Devin Duvernay and some dudes. And you think about what Joe Burrow did against Texas, and he did that with a bunch of dudes that are going to be playing on Sundays.
Yes.
But I don't know. I don't know what it all means in the grand scheme of things for Sam this year. I'm having a hard time deciding what my expectations for Sam are and what they really should be. Because a year ago, I think I bought into the mythology a little too much. I looked at historically sophomore to junior season is when the big jump for all of the previous great quarterbacks in Texas history took place. I looked at a Big 12 landscape that I thought was there for the taking. I think I did that thing where it was like, oh, well, Texas lost some players, but they've recruited really well with young guys. So the guys that are coming in will all be better. I didn't necessarily believe that across the board, but I did pick Texas to win the Big 12 championship. Like that, ultimately, I got to a point by the time we got to August, I bet on Texas because of Sam. And because I thought in the biggest game, Sam against whomever else he'll be playing against at the quarterback position, I'll put my money on Sam. And I don't know that I quite feel that way this year.
Is it because of Sam? Or is it because we have given the program the benefit of the doubt too often when it comes to August? And it's still at this point, you just have to see it.
I just think it's a lot of things. Some things beyond his control, right? Like I had big questions about the front seven for the Texas defense last year. It wasn't Sam's fault that in a lot of games that he went into, they turned into track meets because the defense through the first half of the season was among the worst or the worst in the history of the program. You know, poor enough that even though the defense played better by the end of the season, Todd Orlando and basically every guy on that defensive coaching staff not named Oscar Giles got the hook. Some of the stuff's beyond Sam's control.
How about the special teams, like against like OU? I mean, talk about field play, like every single possession.
Talk about his head coach's poor game management. I mean, there's a lot that falls onto Sam's shoulders when we talk about, like, when we have this conversation of, like, Sam's got to win a Big 12 championship to put himself in the vicinity of a Mount Rushmore of Texas quarterbacks. Part of that is because you look at the top four or five quarterbacks in Texas history, you know, the fourth guy in the pecking order might be Bobby Lane, who's both an NFL and college football Hall of Famer. Like, so to get to that level, like, you have to almost achieve something great because of who's come before you. That's not Sam's fault. I think Sam's the sixth best quarterback in school history. I would take him over Chris Sims. I would easily take him over Major Applewhite. You know, since the change of the century, Vince Young and Colt McCoy over 20 years of football are like the only guys that have played at Texas that I would take over him. But both of those guys like did monument. They've already got their numbers retired. Like they are monumental players in the history of the program. And unfortunately for Sam, he does get held up to those standards, which are like really, really hard to match. Like, Sam hasn't quite been able to do that. And when I talk about that last step that he has to take, that's a step that both Colt McCoy and Vince Young were able to take. I mean, Vince wasn't always the Vince Young in the Rose Bowl against USC. He eventually got there. Colt McCoy had 22 turnovers before his junior – 22 turnovers as a sophomore, and everybody wondered whether or not he was good enough. And then he just took it to, like, all-time great levels of play. And because it's still relatively within the last decade since he played, I think more than Vince, he gets held up to the Colt McCoy standard. But most people forget Colt was really sensational as a freshman. Very average as a sophomore. Kind of average as a senior. I mean, I'll put it to you like this. If Sam Ellinger performs at Colt McCoy's level from his senior season this year, Texas won't win the Big 12. Like, he's got to be better than that. He's got to be – I think Sam's coming off of a year where he finished his quarterback rating, and I won't turn this into a ratings thing. It was around 150. It had been in the 130s before the last couple of games of the season, boosted those numbers up. He finishes around 150, which was an improvement from the season before. I think he's got to go 20 points higher. I think – if Sam's going to reach his optimal level of upside, if Texas is going to win a Big 12 championship, if Sam's going to be first team all Big 12 at quarterback instead of honorable mention, I think he's got to be 20 points higher at the end of the year in his season quarterback rating. And if you could tell me now that in December he'll have a 170 quarterback rating, I'd put a mortgage payment on Texas winning the Big 12 championship. If it's below that or anywhere near what it was a year ago, like, suddenly all bets are off, and I'd probably, if forced to bet, I'd put it on Oklahoma again.
You know, it's interesting because it's really what this is going to come down to, right? It's really for you, for every in the poll, because where were you about 90% catch of people who said Sam needed to win a Big 12 title to be in that top five all
time?
Almost
1,500 votes, and it ended up being like 89% said yes, he has to win a Big 12 championship to be thought of as one of the top five quarterbacks of all time in the school history.
Wow.
Even though he'll probably hold every statistical record that yes. Colt McCoy won't hold, right?
Yes, yes, yes. But at the end of the day, it won't matter. It's really interesting that's the – would be, you know, written on the tombstone, or at least what would be remembered by him is, hey, great stuff, good things, never won a Big 12 championship. And
here lies Sam Ellinger, all-time statistical quarterback leader in Texas football history, didn't win shit.
You know, the conversation, you know what's interesting, Catch, and I think what's really tough as we go into Sam's senior year, you talked about things that are outside of his control, and he has another year that's just like that. And in fact, he may have this year, there may be more things outside of his control than in previous years. Let's think about it for a second. Total new coaching staff. So outside of like three guys, right? And only one of them he would be even interact with every once in a while, which is Stan Drayton. You've got a new OC. Who's got to work with. You're without Colin Johnson, you're without Devin Duvernay. So you've got new receivers that you've got to find a chemistry with and get those guys working on the same page. You've got new offensive linemen. And again, you're going to probably have new offensive linemen every year, but you will have to have a new center. There will have to be a new guard that's in there. So you got that working with you. We look at the running backs, probably solid, I would say, at this point. Not great. You know, Keontae Ingram hasn't been great. He's not a 1,000-yard guy yet. You know, Roschon Johnson was very good. But we're not looking at a great running back room at this point. And, of course, when Bijan gets here, but there's still going to be some catch-up that needs to be there. You've got Cade Brewer at tight end. He's got to stay healthy. But, you know, you've also got new coaches at different positions. There's going to be, you know, new wrinkles to, you know, the playbook. And you know, Sam and your sitch has got to find this connection, and they almost have to be, in some ways, you don't have to be this fantastic, but catcher, they almost need to have a Joe Brady, Joe Burrow type of instant connection. Not saying you've got to be, has the all time, one of the best college football seasons, but the connection has to be instant. Because this is it. Like, this is all it. But yet, there's so many things that are working against him. And then from a defensive perspective, too, you know, when we talk about when he goes off the field, you know, you still got to figure out, you know, and Ash has got to figure out what's going on with the line. They're very thin at linebacker, right? You've got to figure out who the DBs are going to be. There's a lot of things that are outside of his control. And yet, when it's all said and done, Ketch, the thing that everyone will probably remember if he doesn't win the Big 12 title will be, hey, put up a lot of numbers, but it will be this other thing that probably explains it. And I think what we always talk about, like, sometimes an explanation sounds like an excuse. I think that's one of your things that you use. But there might be other things that factor in for him maybe not achieving the ultimate goal.
Yeah, I mean, nobody would say, I think that this is fair, right? I mean, if he played at a school that didn't have the quarterback history that Texas has had in the last 20 years, I'm reminded of James Brown. When James Brown took over in 1994, and then he wins the last Southwest Conference championship in 95, he wins the first Big 12 championship in 1996. If you look at the 25 years of quarterback play before James Brown arrived, it was worse than what you saw in the first couple of years that you arrived. It was way worse. Way, way, way worse.
Well, that's
you had to go 20, you'd have to go from 1970 to 1994. In a 24-year run, Texas produced no NFL players at the quarterback position. Texas didn't produce, I don't think, any all-conference players at that position. They had a hard time having quarterbacks who could throw the football forward. And so when James showed up and suddenly it was like, oh my God, this is what awesome quarterback play looks like. This is what it looks like when a quarterback can win you a game. James Brown, Texas was a 21-point underdog to Nebraska in the Big 12 championship game. And James Brown predicts before the game that they might beat Nebraska by 21 points. Then he goes onto the field and backs it up like Texas had never seen that before, or at least they hadn't seen it since only white players were playing. And like, Sam doesn't have that. Like, James Brown was held up against all the crap for a quarter century that came before him. And Sam plays in the context of, yeah, it was mostly a decade of crap before him. But boy, everybody can still remember Colt. And Vince Young is arguably the greatest college football player of all time. So there's just like these standards that he's held up against that are completely unfair. And then you add on all of this outside stuff that he literally has no control over. And it's a hard bar. But it comes back to the things that we talked about last year leading into the season. It's all about the quarterback, baby. Like, all this stuff we'll talk about is unfair, but in college football, especially in the Big 12. But look, we saw it last year. Look at the four teams that made the college football Final Four. They all have essentially Heisman finalists quarterbacking them. You know, in the playoff, it felt like Jalen Hurts was the worst quarterback in the Final Four, and he was the best. He was the best offensive player in the Big 12 a year ago, if I'm not mistaken. I think he won Offensive Player of the Year. Certainly was first team All Big 12 quarterback. So, like, we can talk about all this other outside noise, and we did it last year, right? It was like, well, let's talk about the defense. We'll talk about this. We'll talk about that. But at the end of the day, if your quarterback is a bad MF-er,
yes,
like, all that other stuff matters a whole lot less.
Remember what you wrote about the OU winning in spite of their defense?
Yeah.
And you had the conversation. Remember, I referenced that many times, that you did the podcast with the one of the
McQuishan.
OU. Yes. And that's the thing that came out was.
He was like, we talk about this every year. Can the defense be good? And then they still win a Big 12 championship, no matter where they're ranked in terms of defensive standing. So, and some of that is, look, they've got badass offensive coaching. Like Lincoln Riley, every year that he's been at Oklahoma, they've been pretty badass at quarterback and on offense. Yurcich really is a key guy in this conversation, because if we talk about Joe Brady, we talk about what happened with Burrow, and they didn't even get a full off season.
No.
But it showed what the right coach with the right player can do. The Tim Beck, Tom Herman combo act with Sam, not good enough. What Texas has to hope is that Jurich is really good. That Jurich's upside is this is a future head coach in the waiting. That in 5 years from now, we'll be talking about this guy being a head coach somewhere because he's that good. And guys that are that good on offense get head coaching jobs. And, you know, eventually that will be Brady. Eventually Joe Brady will be a guy that I think has those types of opportunities. And Burrow will be playing in the NFL. If Jurich is an elite-level offensive coordinator, then I think if you're Sam Ehlinger, and I think if you're an optimist of a Texas Longhorn fan, you have to feel really good because that, I think, is what Sam is needing. I think you could really make a strong contention that the offensive coaching at Texas, even though they weren't awful last year on offense, I think Tom Herman would suggest that, look, man, we finished in among the top 25 in total offense, that there were areas where we were really good. We just need to make that a little bit better. The difference between elite and very good in college football is steep. So you're like, oh, we were top 25 good in terms of offense. Man, that's a big difference between top five, top 10. And in order to beat Oklahoma for a Big 12 championship, I think they're going to need this offense to take that step. I think in order for Texas to be the best team in the Big 12 in 2020, it's going to require Texas being at least in the discussion of being the best offense in the Big 12. And it wasn't that a year ago.
I think that's very fair. So let me transition it then, because I think they're very fair points. If we're just talking about an offense, you know, we're doing what we thought he could do, like putting the team on his back, right? What we saw against Georgia, you know, willing a team to victory and willing a team to wins. What we almost saw against LSU, right? Putting the team on their back. We're to the point where we got Ed Orgeron after the game saying they were just hopeful that Texas didn't get back on the field, because if Texas did get back on the field, he didn't feel like their defense could stop Sam Ehlinger. Like, we've seen glimpses of excellence from him. So listen, the one thing you and I, we have these fun battles. Everyone doesn't know, I mean, you know, Ketch and I are friends, but he's still, you know, a boss. And so he will ask these questions every summer, and it will be, what's going on with the summer workouts? Because Ketch,
I stopped.
Because Ketch is at a time where, you know, the quarterback would go knock on doors and this and that. And I'm like, they're not doing that, man. And so
I think they should be.
Well, I mean, an argument could be made.
I bet they do that shit at Oklahoma.
Well, they might do a lot of things well over there. I mean, and maybe the new special teams guy that they hired can give them some insight into a little bit of that success. Okay, but you did that with the understanding that summer workouts are important. So let's apply that same passion and fervor for the spring. What do you think needs to accomplish? What does Sam need to accomplish? Let's start in the spring football. When we have that spring game on April the 25th, and it's all, you know, first practice on March 24th, last one is on April the 25th. What's the thing that you feel like Sam would need to have accomplished this spring in order for you to feel good or confident that, okay, come fall ball, this team has got a shot?
I think the biggest thing that I would, and I expect this to actually occur, I think hearing that Sam and Jurich are getting along like kissing cousins would be the first step. Because ultimately, whatever adjustments are made, Sam's got to be able to make them somewhat seamlessly. He's got to be able, those two guys have to be able to be in each other's mind. Like, we do that. Now, you and I have worked together now for like half a decade. So I can instinctively know where you're going to come from on a subject before, you know, like when you made the suggestion yesterday about a podcast, I immediately was like, yeah. No, I got it. I got the type. I get what we're going to do. they need to have it's kind of a shotgun marriage here. Like this has got to happen somewhat fast. But to hear that Sam's not having problems, that Sam has made a bit of a seamless adjustment to who he's working with, and that they're getting along, and that they're kind of in tune with each other, I think is a big thing. Because I think the other pieces of the puzzle will take some time. I think Texas is better at receiver than, I think very quietly, Brennan Eagles had a very good sophomore season. I think historically his sophomore season holds up very well to the best receivers in the history of the program. You go back, look at his sophomore season, and then go back and look at, I think Jordan Shipley's the best receiver the school's ever seen. Brennan Eagles had a better sophomore year. So, six touchdowns, I think almost 17 yards a catch. Like, that's a good number. So, from on the outside, I think he's got a guy that he's going to be able to lean on. They've got to develop who that important guy in the slot's going to be, because we know how important that position is in this offense, and it's whoever assumes control of that has a chance to catch a lot of balls and catch a lot of touchdowns and provide a lot of yards. But the overall depth of the wide receiver position is something that I think is still a work in progress, right? I mean, Marcus Washington's a guy that's going to be counted on this year. He wasn't very much last year. I think that's something that takes between 7 and 9 months to get down. And the reason why I always bring up those summer workouts that Tom Herman and the powers that be and the Texas football offices kind of downplay the importance of, is because I personally witnessed during those summer workouts the chemistry stuff come together. I can remember in 2005, and God, I apologize in advance because I'm going all historical on you, and even people listen to this podcast at times, the names of the people I mentioned are so old that sometimes you just kind of go out of the blue. But I remember watching him work in 2005. He didn't really have a bona fide returning slot receiver coming back. There wasn't anybody that had been successful really in 2004. It was a position they really needed sewed up. And you could watch in summer workouts that Vince Young had a little something going with this kid named Billy Pittman. And Billy Pittman didn't do shit in 2004. And Billy Pittman didn't do shit in the spring. And nobody was talking about Billy Pittman doing anything in 2005. But my eyeballs in July and just before the start of the August workouts in 2005, you could see that Vince and this guy had chemistry, that Vince was going to this player. And I can remember going into the 2005 season saying, I think Billy Pittman is going to be a monster breakout player for this team. And he was, but it was nothing that it was something that happened very much on the low key. Very few people expected it. Very few people saw it coming. It all occurred because rep after rep after rep after working together, those things happen. And one of the things about spring football itself, not enough reps. You get 15 practices. They're not all in full pads. And then you go months in between spring football to the beginning of August football, at which point you have another 15 practices leading up to the season. There are no guarantees. Just one of the reasons why I've always felt like those summer workouts are so important, because does 7-on-7 mean that you're going to, are you going to be great? Does it mean that nothing's guaranteed, but I am a proponent for quarterbacks and receivers to throw to each other as much as humanly possible during the off season, because man, and Anwar, we see it in the pros. We see those back shoulder fades. When we see an NFL quarterback throw that back shoulder, that one of the hardest throws in football to make and stick, it occurs because that receiver and that quarterback have run that play thousands of times. So quarterback doesn't even need to see the receiver make his break. Quarterback doesn't even care where the defender is. Quarterback throws that ball in that spot knowing that receiver is going to be there because they've thrown that thing 2,000 times. And that's like that's why I harp on the summer workouts, because I'm a believer that you need that kind of volume of reps to truly build harmony in the passing game with the turnover in players that occurs. and that it's not something that's emphasized. I think a tweak to that could only help the Texas offense. I think this side, and I've done it. I've gone on a summer passing thing.
You but did it.
But I think that little tweak, and because I think coaches would worry about, well, they're gonna build bad habits, and they're going to, you know, we won't be in control, and we want to be in control, and whatever it is they're doing on their own can be just as problematic as it can be positive. I think it can only be positive, because I think when you've got a quarterback like Sam Ehlinger, bad habits don't occur. I think if a receiver's not running a route right, the receivers, they know, but your quarterback knows. Your quarterback has to almost be an extension of the offensive coordinator and the head coach in those moments. And Sam's got the personality for that. Like Tyrone Swoops didn't. David Ash really didn't. I don't know that Shane Buechel really had that. This guy, Sam is that guy. Sam is the alpha male. It's the thing we talked about for years of why Herman likes him. I think if going into this offseason, this group needs to be getting as many reps as humanly possible. And personally, I would feel much more optimistic if I knew that volume was occurring in ways that were slightly different in past years, where building that kind of chemistry away from the coach's eyeballs wasn't as stressed as much as it might have been in a foregone era.
You know, let me piggyback off of that, because I think there's something to be said for that. And look, I think we clearly understand Sam Ehlinger wants to win. Like we get all of that. But I also feel like, Ketch, that his desire to win has to burn hotter than it's ever done before. Because look, when Sam is done after this year, Ketch, we're back to the question marks. Like, yeah. we take it for granted that, hey, it's, you know, this, you know, he's played well. And we're not saying that we don't appreciate how well he plays, but you're back to the question marks. Now you're back to what's Hudson Carr look like? What is JaQuindon Jackson? What does he look like? What does Casey Thompson really look like? You know, I hear things in the building about how good Casey Thompson looks or doesn't look, but he also hasn't really had, you know, game time. So what does that look like? That makes it to me this year is like it all chips in, because you go back to the question marks next year. And I think for Sam as a senior leader, first and foremost, I've noticed covering his team, a lot of these seniors, they loading up on classes once it's September hits around, like August, September, like they may got one or two, the thing, you know, they're finishing up their degree, but for the most part, like these guys are pretty much done. All right. So they have a lot of time. A lot of these guys have a lot of time on here. We do interviews with guys on Tuesdays, and like, what are you getting ready to do? I'm just going to go back home, take a nap, and then go to practice. So, Sam's got to be a guy that takes advantage of some of that time. I think he's, to your point, he's got to be a guy that, you know, not only is developing that chemistry with a bunch of new guys, again, because he's got to look at it as this is it for him too. Like this is his hopes and dreams, and you know, and every time we've seen the childhood photo, like his crowning moment, his crowning achievement can't be standing on a stage in New Orleans saying we're back. Like that cannot be all there is. You know, you can't say that. Well, my biggest achievement occurred as a sophomore, and I was able to just win games, and I won two Alamo Bowls after that. Like that can't be it. That can't be the ceiling. And we're not putting national title expectations on him, but I think that desire has to burn. That desire has to burn to get close to Yursich and pick his brain, and for them to have that relationship, that desire has to burn for him to get a connection with all of his receivers and to make sure they're on point. And hey, listen, you know, one of the things that they wanted him to do last year was to be a leader of the defense. And that has to be there also. Like there has to be a part of him that he's got to, you know, he's alpha enough to have a little bit of Tebow in him. where you where you felt like that guy can will a team to a victory, right? And again, Tim Tebow is one of the greatest college quarterbacks in the history of the sport. So I'm not trying to jump off a cliff, but I'm using it as a comparison of a guy that you got to feel like I'm carrying this team on my back. I've got this thing covered. Follow me, and it's got to be that same passion and that same desire. And some of Paulie, you know, inside the building, and listen to this like on where he already has that, but. Anything you have, you can always get better at. You can always improve at. So for me, I'm piggybacking off of you and saying I agree with all that because at the end of the day, this is it.
And I don't even care if, like, DBs show up. Like, if it's just Sam throwing to Marcus Washington for an hour, three nights a week, like, I just feel like I guarantee you that time will pay off in a ways that make what happens in August – less important, right? I mean, one of the things that usually happen is that survival of the fittest, man, Darwinism kicks in on college football campuses all the time. The cream rises to the crop. And a lot of time coaches don't make decisions. The decisions make themselves. Like the guy that steps up, the coaches ultimately don't have to go in on the final day of practice and go, God, who are we starting against South Florida? Like that, like the guys know. The guys see it. The guys see it. And, God, I always throw the history lessons. Colt McCoy won the job over Jevon Snead in the summer. They went into the summer. Nobody knew who was going to be the quarterback. They came out of the summer, and there wasn't even a battle in August. And, like, I think that's just what these guys need. Like, I think the one thing that Sam and this cast need is they just need to be better on the same page. And too often last year, and a lot of this had to do with the fact that Colin Johnson wasn't healthy throughout the season, it felt like Sam had one guy that he could really depend on. Brennan Eagle seemed to show up every other Saturday. By the end of the year, Jake Smith couldn't be trusted. And I think that in order for this team to win a Big 12 championship, that group of receivers that Sam has available to him, including Cade Brewer and, you know, Jarrett Weil and anybody else that is going to be on the field, there just has to be a connection between those guys that's next level. Next level from what it's been these last couple of years, where it feels like Sam goes into every game like he's Batman and he's got a receiver that's Robin, and like, and occasionally there's another guy, you know, that when Colin Johnson was healthy, it'd either be Colin or Lil Jordan or Colin or Devin Duvernay. I think what Sam needs is a connection with about four or five guys that when they're rotating guys in and out, he knows those guys like the back of his hand. And it's the thing that I think this offense has been missing. I don't feel like I watched Sam Ellinger last year and thought, man, what chemistry he has with his receivers. I think we went into games and out of games saying, man, what chemistry he has with Devin Duvernay. And then it was like crickets after that.
I agree. And I think, Ketch, I'll start to wind it down with this. I know your time is getting a little short here. You know, you and I went into last season thinking to ourselves, okay, you know, Sam's got a shot to be better than Jalen Hurts. And at the end of the day, Jalen Hurts balled out. And once again, Lincoln Riley was a wizard. And I think when we go into this season, and we'll do it.
Can I pat you on the back?
What's that?
I think you're still more right than I was about Jalen Hurts. Like at the end of the day, okay. He's got scoreboard. But I think that in Oklahoma's toughest games last year, Hurts regressed back to the mean as a performer. And it's sad for Texas that reality didn't translate into, you know, Texas winning a championship, because as good as Hurts was last year, and he was ended up being the best quarterback in the Big 12, he wasn't Kyler Murray and he wasn't Baker Mayfield. And we had that discussion in October, and I was on, I think that, well, the stats are the stats. And you were like, I don't know about that, because like after his first read, like he could have problems. And I think I think you were proven right in my, at least in my mind, if nobody else's, like, I think you were right in that discussion. Sorry.
I appreciate it. So, but then when we go into this season, Catch, I mean, I think we will probably unanimously agree that Sam Ehlinger is the best quarterback in the Big 12, right? We'll probably say Brock Purdy is number two, maybe, right? You can go where you want to go from there. Do you want to go the guy from Baylor? What is it, Charlie Brewer?
AKA, you know, David Ash.
AKA, hey, the did you know Texas didn't offer him a scholarship? Remember that year where that's all they talked about in that broadcast? You got Spencer Sanders from Oklahoma State. You got Spencer Rattler from Oklahoma. You know, Max Duggan or Dugan from TCU, a Skylar Thompson from Kansas State. I'm looking through a list. Alan Bowman from Texas Tech. You know, you got West Virginia and you got Kansas. So
I think Spencer Rattler is the guy that everybody should assume is going to be first team all Big 12 quarterback. Sam's, it's weird. Sam's got to prove that he's first team all Big 12 quarterback. Until he proves that he's that guy, the default at that position is whoever's playing quarterback for Oklahoma under Lincoln Riley. Because the one thing that Spencer Rattler will have going for him is he'll have a better, more proven group of wide receivers. I mean, even though they lose CeeDee Lamb, they're loaded at wide receiver, and they're loaded at running back, and I think they feel really good about their offensive line. So the total offense at Oklahoma, for me, is the most complete in the Big 12. Their questions at quarterback, but that dude's surrounded by guys that he'll trust and are proven. And Texas, I think, is proven at quarterback. And there's just more questions around him than maybe Rattler will have at Oklahoma. And I know Texas fans will disagree with me there, but I have definitely reached the point where until someone proves otherwise, like, Lincoln Riley's quarterback will be first team all Big 12. And that has to change if Texas is going to win the Big 12.
Well, here's the thing too, Catch. I'm looking through OU's schedule, right? So they start off with Missouri State. They play Tennessee, and then they play Army, which ironically gave them a game a few years ago. But they start off with a non-conference schedule that is typical, where it's there's not really killers that are in there. And I think Texas has also kind of adopted that mode where they're like, all right, we're not going to schedule two Power Five teams and play 11 out of 12 Power Five schools. Like, we need a break. We need some tune-ups before they get into it. And then they play, you know, they'll open the Big 12 conference against Baylor, and then they'll play Texas. So by that time, Spencer would have had four games to kind of get on a roll, right? And kind of be rocking and rolling and ready to go at that point. It is interesting, though, but I'm with you that he is the witch over there, or wizard rather, over there at OU. And I think every year, Cutch, you've heard it, and I've heard it, people will say, well, you know, we got a chance with Baker. And then Baker goes Baker. And then they go, all right, well, Baker's gone, but Kyler Murray, take our chances with that guy, because, I mean, he's yes, a short little version, this and that. And, like, we got it. And then it's like, okay, then Kyler Murray goes Kyler Murray. And then it's like, all right, well, Kyler Murray's gone. But you know what? Jalen Hurts, I mean, come on. Like, Alabama, he lost his starting position. I mean, like, how good is Jalen Hurts, really? And then Jalen Hurts is in New York competing for Heisman, right? So, so then the danger is, especially with Texas fans, is, well, you know what? Sure, those three things happened. But when it comes to Spencer Rattler, he's still a young guy. Like, if you go down that route, you're setting yourself up. Like, it's one of those, like, just tap out, right? Just tap out, let the conversation go. But I still think Sam enters the season as the number one guy on paper.
And I agree. I totally agree.
Yes, and I think it's up to him to finish as the number one guy.
I thought that last year, though, too. Like, and it has to be said that, and again, we've already outlined, and my final thought on this will be this. Like, I thought that about Sam a year ago, and the final two, look, you don't, you don't get to exclude certain games just to help you make a point. But until those last two games of the season against Texas Tech and then against Utah, Sam's season numbers were below Brock Purdy's. They were below – there was like three tiers of quarterbacks in the Big 12. It was Jalen Hurts in his own tier. And then there was a tier of Purdy and Charlie Brewer. And then there was another tier where I think Ellinger was the first guy in that tier, but he only had – like his stats compared to a guy like Jet Duffy that were essentially the same. But then in the last two games of the season, he pulled himself up into that tier with Purdy and Brewer. So – you know, if someone said to me, I think that there's a cluster of quarterbacks based on what happened last year and throw them up in the air in whichever order they land in is whichever order they land in, I would go, I get that. I think there's some confirmation bias in that we see so much of Sam. And the intangibles in him stand out so much to us because we see that part of him so much on a daily basis and covering the program in ways that we don't see a Brewer or Purdy or anybody else in the conference, that I think it makes us lift Sam up a little bit. But if we were looking at performance only from last season, I don't think you can definitively say that Sam Ellinger is better than those other guys. Those other guys beat him head to head. I mean, that happened. And like head to head, Texas lost all three games against the three other quarterbacks in the conference that were at least on Sam's level. And then they basically won the rest of the games for the most part, with the exception of a couple. So, you know, I just think that this is the year that Sam Ellinger has waited his entire life for. This year, senior year, quarterback of Texas, everything he's ever worked for his entire life kind of is on the line. His legacy, his career at Texas, like just his personal goals and mission as a quarterback at this school. I think there's a better chance that he gets there than he doesn't, but he's not there yet, which is different than we would have said, I think, for both when we talk about the great quarterbacks of all time at Texas and in school history. All of those other guys, by the time they entered their senior season, had hit that next stratosphere. Although you could always point out that James Brown was never consistently great, great. But I would suggest that was almost a product of the era that he played in that didn't produce quarterbacks with the staggering numbers that we see today. The defenses were better back then, stuff like that. I'm pulling for Sam. He's such a good dude that when I – say that I have questions about him, it's not because I don't know. Like there's almost like this feeling of negativity when you stop and pause with regards to like what he is as a player, man. I hope this time next year, people are like, remember when you doubted Sam, remember when you weren't sure he was the best quarterback in the Big 12, man. For everything that is holy and important for the growth of our site and, you know, just a shot of energy into the Texas program that we haven't seen in a long time. Like, I want Sam to get there. I just don't know that I fully believe it, even if I willingly admit that it's entirely possible.
I'll close on this. I wrote this in my Sunday Pulpit back in February. And Ellinger is going to be the fourth four-year starter in Longhorn history. Minimum of six starts each year. The three other players are Bobby Lane, Peter, am I saying it, Gardere? Is that how I say
Peter
it?
Gardere.
Peter Gardere and Colt McCoy. You know what those three quarterbacks have in common, Ketch? Each one won a conference title during their tenure at Texas. And then when you look at from a career start perspective, Sam Ellinger is ranked seventh right now. Number one in career starts is Colt at 53, Gardere at two, James Brown, Marty Akins, Bobby Lane, Brett Stafford. Sam Ellinger is at number seven. Of that list, four of the quarterbacks won a conference title. That's Colt McCoy in 2009. Brown won
three of them, actually, 94, 95. That's in the old Southwest Conference. And then the Big 12 title in 96. Aikens in 73 and 75. Blaine in 45. So essentially, what at the end of the day, Sam Ehlinger will be remembered. But what he does this year will be is kind of shape how we remember him. I think the memories will always be positive if he doesn't win. I don't think anyone will look at it and say, well, that sucked. And no one's going to say, well, the, you know, that 10-win season sucked or anything to that effect. And if they win 10 this year, I don't think people will say that sucked. But for the ultimate goal and the ultimate prize, and what do they say? The reason why you come to Texas – you know, what's funny, people, I always have players say like, well, you know, we play at Texas, people always give us our best. And I always think, well, sure, that's why you came here. You came here because you expect people to give you your best. And you know what? There's other teams that get people's best too. You don't think Alabama gets everyone's best every year? You don't think LSU gets everyone's best? And you're going to get everyone's best when you wear certain names. And so that being said, you came here for a reason. And, you know, like you, for our site, for everything, for just people being nice on our board, people just being good to deal with. I hope he does win. I'm rooting for him. I hope he is successful in all those endeavors. And just obviously everything he's been through in life, you know, you want a guy like that to finish on top. But it's an uphill battle. There's a lot of things that are outside of his control. And I think if he can do this, and get that Big 12 title, when you factor in all the other things that had happened after last season, it would be one of his biggest – actually, it would be his biggest accomplishment in college football. Ketch, anything else?
Two things, quickly. If he wins a Big 12 championship this year, I think you could make a strong case because of all the statistical, the Sugar Bowl victory, all those things. I think you could make a case he gets into the top five. Like, I think you probably bump James Brown out at that point. And I love me some James Brown. And the other thing is this. He's got to beat Oklahoma. You know, when you mentioned Peter Gardere's name, the thing about Peter, 4-0 against Oklahoma.
Wow.
When Sam finishes his career, he can't be 1-4 or 1-5 against Oklahoma. Because at that point, that number will stand out in a way that, you know, everybody talks about Roy Williams when he was at Texas and he had a great career, goes on to be a first round draft pick. And all anybody ever, the only thing people say about him is that Texas didn't beat Oklahoma while he was on campus. And Sam's got one, but it can't be 1-4 or 1-5. That game for his legacy. We haven't really talked specifically about that game, but once you mentioned Gardere's name, it was hard for me not to think about. He's got to win that game this year. Well, and if they play it a second time, you know, winning that one too would probably go a long way.
Well, let's reconvene in the offseason at some point. Once we get past spring ball and we're fishing for topics, let's talk about that. Let's do that. Let's table that podcast.
You know, Sam Podcast 2.
Sam Podcast 2. Or, okay, you know how many we're going to have, though? But
we're going to do eight. Oh, yeah. Once a month, we're playing the hits. We're playing Old Town Road, a.k.a. Sam Ehlinger.
Yes, and until the wheels fall off. So Ketch, thank you for joining. I appreciate you coming in, as always. I thought we had a really great podcast. So I appreciate you doing everything. Anything you want to say real quick before you go? Anything you want to say about the Yak? Anything about the Yak?
Oh, well, look, you can all – hey, make sure if you guys haven't downloaded the Yak onto your iPhone, like, do that. Because from accessibility, the tip – I mean, it's a really strong app. It's funny because I pay to subscribe to a Liverpool, like, premium podcast deal. It's one of the things that inspired me to do the Yak. I thought, wow, they could do it for Liverpool soccer. Like, Texas football people would just love that. And their app's been down for weeks, and like its overall usability isn't as strong as our app. And like they've got like 15,000 subscribers. Download the app. It's free. And at that point, you can either listen on the app or you can download it into any of the players that you want to. But download that. Then all the content is literally just a click away on your iPhone. And that's the only thing that I would say is that you know, download the free app. It's there. It's free. And it's a pretty badass app. Our guy Brian does a phenomenal job on the tech side.
Cool. All right. Well, I appreciate that, Catch. Thank you for throwing that in there. So you go and handle the rest of your day, things you got to do. Enjoy the rest of your Super Tuesday. Thank you guys for listening to the Drunk Uncle Sportscast. I appreciate your support as always. And always remember I say, live each day like it was your last, because one day it will be. And we'll talk soon.